Sark fans, and welcome back to Shrews Views, the final Shrews Views episode of the season, brought to you by the Shropshire Star. My name is Johnny Drury. As always, I am with the Shropshire Star's main Salop man, Mr. Ollie Westbury, who, like you Salop fans, has had to endure a pretty tough season watching Shrewsbury Town, and we're going to rate Salop's performance today and discuss everything from the first whistle to the last. Ollie, how are you, mate? Sigh of relief that it's all over, or a bit gutted?
I don't know. I think you always miss the season when it goes, don't you? Like, it's one of them things.
I think you get two or three weeks where you're sort of like, oh, this is nice. I got my Saturdays back. And then after that, you're like, oh, I want pre-season to start there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm back working like Monday to Friday and it feels weird.
yeah, no days off.
Friday, I'm normally off on a Friday. That's normally my day off, as you well know. But I don't know. Just weird, feels weird. So I feel slightly strange being working and then having Saturday and Sunday off, and I can't say I like the end of the football season, but I must admit I'm glad we can draw the curtain down on that season, because that wasn't very fun.
No, it wasn't indeed, and we're going to go through all of it. We're going to rate Salop's performance, reflect back on sort of the first half of the season under Matt Taylor. And then obviously Paul Hurst arrival, rate his performance as well. We'll talk about the release and retain list that came out last week and see if Ollie was surprised by any of the names on each side of the fence. And then we've got plenty of questions from you Salop fans. You've really excelled yourselves today. So we've got loads of them to discuss, and then we'll have a little bit of a wrap up at the end of the podcast. Now, Ollie, Shrewsbury avoided avoided the drop just before final games of the season. Now, overall, from start to finish, we're going to start this podcast. I want you to rate Salop's campaign out of 10 and just give a brief description as to why you've given the rating that you have. I can't imagine it's going to be as high as last season. Well, it's definitely not going to be as high as last season, but what are you saying?
I'm glad I got some warning about this. All 2 minutes of it. What am I going to give it? I don't know. I'm not in the when you do player ratings, I'm not in the categories of giving out threes and fours. I'm going to give it a five.
You never chucked out four. Oh, I've chucked out.
I have chucked out four.
No threes.
No threes. There's nothing to gain from giving players threes.
I think I've lobbed a couple of threes out before. I've never gone lower. I like it when fans tweet you in after player ratings. This is going off on a tangent, but it's the last pod of the season, so we'll sort of digress a little bit. And fans send them in and they're like, so-and-so, one, so-and-so, two, so-and-so, minus two. I'm like, that's never going to happen.
That's you're never going to do that. Ultimately, some of the players, well, I know for a fact some of the players read them. And when you see them in the training ground next week, they will they'll be quite happy to give you a verbal volley if you... you know, depending on how you rate them. So you have to be very, very careful.
Not just players.
Yes, there's not just more players.
I won't go into detail, but I've had a personal Shrewsbury Town story that involves a non-player being a little bit aggrieved by my player ratings. I'm sure Shrewsbury Town fans can fill the gaps in there.
I remember when you got told off for calling one player a wing back, and then you got told that he's not a wing back.
He played wing back that night. That's what it gets. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah, This is a serious tangent, isn't it?
Let's get back on the road. Salop's performance rating out of 10.
I'm going to give it a 5, which I think is probably maybe a little high. I think I'm going to give it a 5 and I'll explain my reasons why. I think a lot of people weren't privy to the expectations and the goals at the start of the season, and they perhaps weren't privy to them until the accounts came out. I was one of those that was kind of well aware of what the situation was and what, you know, what constituted a successful season for Shrewsbury, and that was staying in the division. That is what they considered a success, staying in League One. So for that, it's mission accomplished. However, they did it with pretty much zero style, not far off from zero goals, and at times were absolutely awful. At other times they did okay and they showed that they can play, but it was a very, I mean, underwhelming, I think, does it not do it justice? It just, yeah, it was a poor campaign. And I think, you know, we can see why the squad's not quite at the level that it was when Steve Cotterill was in charge the year before, you know, because of the financial constraints and so on and so forth. But, you know, Paul Hurst proved when he was in charge of the club last time that on a small budget, you can recruit well, you can get good players in, you can find good deals. You might have to box clever and you might have to take a few more risks than other clubs, but it is possible. But I think it's fair to say that that just didn't happen for Shrewsbury this summer. And, you know, we kind of found ourselves. I often look at the first team of the season to the last team of the season. And, you know, we kind of found ourselves with, you know, quite a lot of players that were there the season before playing, you know, the majority of the games. And yeah, it was underwhelming, to say the least, I would suggest.
The season almost splits into sort of two, maybe not halves, but sort of two parts. And the first part was obviously Matt Taylor coming in last summer, and you mentioned all that recruitment there and sort of a lot of players coming in. And Shrewsbury taking a sort of bit of different approach to their recruitment. I'm going to ask you now sort of a tougher question, which I imagine will be a lower mark, is sort of rating Matt Taylor's performance, which ultimately ended in him being sacked. And, you know, before his sacking, some I watched a couple of them, pretty dreadful performances.
Yeah, it was more performances than points return, I suppose, because when Matt Taylor was sacked, we were further away from the bottom four than we were when we finished the season. You know, I think it was 6 points clear of the bottom. I mean, this is off memory, this could be wrong, but from what I remember, it was 6 points clear when he was sacked. And obviously we ended the season 4 points clear and kind of survived because of everybody else being pants, really. Like, if we proper strip it down, Paul Hurst had said to me that he wanted 50 points. That was the goal that he felt that they needed for safety. And obviously they didn't achieve that and they stayed up anyway. Maybe that would have changed if, you know, that last game of the season wasn't as much of a dead rubber as it turned out to be. Maybe they would have been able to have got themselves up for it a bit more. But yeah, Matt Taylor's time at the club, like you say, there were some pretty disastrous games in there. There were also games where they played pretty well. They were few and far between, really. You can count on a couple of, I thought they played pretty well against Wrexham. They played pretty well against Derby. But in the main, they had pretty much zero goal threat. And, you know, that was shown by them being lowest scorers in the entire EFL, you know, for the vast majority of his reign. And yeah. He kind of paid the price for that, didn't he, after the Peterborough game? So I don't know, what can you give a manager out of 10 that didn't last much longer than half a season? 4?
Yeah. 3.5.
Is that what you're giving him?
Yeah, but you don't like going down to 3. So I'll go 3.5 and you can go 4. I would say 3.5. I do think there are caveats to this, and you've got to balance things out. I think he was unfortunate with injuries. Like managers have gone in summer's gone by, obviously. Steve Cotterill, they spent more money and recruited a smaller squad but better players. Maybe didn't have the, I don't know, resources to recruit. These are all the things that sort of stack up against a manager, and there's probably things we don't realise that go on behind the scenes. But yeah, it was poor, I thought. You know, considering, I'd watched a little bit of Taylor's team when he was at Walsall, where he ultimately got the sack because performances weren't there, but the results weren't there, but performances were really good. They were an expansive team. And I think if you're losing games, but you're playing attractive football, you don't get away with it, but it's kind of a little bit easier to swallow. Whereas at Shrewsbury, it was a case of the points weren't coming and the performances were awful to watch as well.
Yeah, and we didn't score any goals either.
Yeah, exactly. And he was replaced by the returning Paul Hurst, who Ollie has said there has just helped scrape survival. In terms of his sort of few months in charge, Ollie, how do you rate that in terms of a score and sort of why? And did you expect a little bit more? You know, I know he said they wanted 50 points and sat up a sort of closer to the drop zone than they were when he arrived. How do you sort of reflect on it all?
Probably give Paul 5.5. I would say after that game against Northampton, I thought we'd finish mid-table just from that one performance. And performances generally improved, and we offered much more of a goal threat, but still couldn't get away from the fact that every now and then the players would just dish up, you know, one of those showings where they just weren't good enough. That's probably what I'd be looking at giving Paul. I thought he did pretty well. I thought he improved the team, but I don't think the points return probably demonstrated that. And, you know, it was close, wasn't it, in the end? It was close. So, you know, it's a difficult season all round. And even though Paul Hurst perhaps, you know, improved the team, and improved performances, there was still the odd game in there where they turned up and they were, you know, pretty pants. And you know, the one thing I did feel under Hurst was that we could give anyone a game and get a result against anyone, whereas I really didn't feel that against, you know, when Taylor was in charge. I felt like once we went a goal down, that was it. You know, it was damage limitation. How many will we lose by? Whereas with Hurst, it did feel like we could go to places like Derby and Reading. And I'm just saying this because this is places where Shrewsbury went and got points or won, but get results. Whereas it was probably more against the teams you'd expect Shrewsbury to do better against that they struggled against a little bit more, you know, when Hurst kind of took over. So, you know, it's one of those things, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to come back to a little point on that one. We'll discuss the release and retain list in a second. But just a shout out for our sponsor. As always, all our podcasts at the Shop Star and the Express and Star are sponsored by the Kettle and Toaster Man, your graded product specialist over in Briley Hill, who has got a range of top products for some even better prices. So head over to kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Right, Salop wasted no time on Saturday, Ollie, announcing their release and retain list. Players had already been told. We saw some pretty emotional scenes, Elliot Bennett being one, who had been released by Salop. So we'll just go down the list of names who will be leaving the club and then discuss those and also look at the players who Salop are looking to keep and have offered new deals. So released Harry Burgoyne, came through the ranks at Salop, is without a club and looking for a new club. Now Tom Flanagan has gone just a few months after that controversial radio rant that we discussed about the Salop recruitment. He's no longer a Shrewsbury player. Whether that played a part in his release, we'll never know. Tamisi Subuwale, just one season at Shrewsbury after arriving last summer. Elliot Bennett, who was here under Shropshire Lad, who was here under Steve Coxwell, sort of returned last summer, signed a short-term deal. He's now that club. Tom Bayliss was a sort of standout player in the sort of early time at the club, and when he was signed by Steve Coxwell, but he is now gone. He's been released. Rayan Tulloch, a short-lived spell, the former West Brom man, tipped for high things at West Brom a few years ago, given a massive contract, but never lived up to it, and he's had a short spell here at Shrewsbury, and now he's been released. Aidan O'Brien, someone who came in with sort of big pedigree, but it never really got going, sort of sent out on loan and never recovered. And Ryan Bowman, who's gone after a few years at the club. Elsewhere, Shrewsbury are looking to keep Mal Benning, who's been arguably one of the best performers this season, the left back. Aaron Pierre, who arrived back at the club on a short-term deal last year, they're looking to keep him. And obviously Dan Udo, which has been well publicised. And it's also been well publicised that the club have offered Mark Amorosi and Shea Dunkley new deals. Ollie, just reflecting back on that, that mark you give Paul Hurst, really.
Yeah.
We all expected it to be a bit better after that really good start against Northampton. But is it kind of a blessing in disguise that the season went how it went? Because now it maybe, I don't know, maybe solidified Hurst's mind in terms of releasing a number of players, like a big number of players. And now he's got maybe not a blank canvas, but certainly a blanker canvas to go with. You know, if he would have come in, Salop would have finished mid-table, bottom of the top half, and then gone on an amazing run with these players. A lot of them, I imagine there would be eight on the release list. So is Salop's end of season form maybe been a blessing in disguise?
Yeah, it does feel like, I tweeted on Saturday, like it feels like the end of an era. And I think that's very much the case. I think one Shrewsbury fan tweeted me back saying why, like we always have a lot of turnover. But I mean, there's nine players left on the contract. You know, I mean, for me, that, I mean, there's a few, but that is a huge amount of players to.
I think
to
it's the biggest we've seen in a few years at Shrewsbury, because there has been sort of that settled. Up until last summer, certainly the years under Steve Cotchell, where he kept the small core of players. What surprised you about that, Ollie? Because we look in there, you look at the names, Harry Burgoyne, it felt like Harry Burgoyne was going to be at Shrewsbury, you know, until he retired. As a second choice goalkeeper, he loved the club so much, but he's gone. You know, Tomisi Subawale, you know, played quite a lot of games, but never really hit the ground.
I must admit, he is one that I am surprised about, Tomisi. Yeah. He's one that I thought they
made. He played a lot of football under Hurst.
Yeah. And he showed something. He showed that he had something. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he was the best player that you will ever see. But he without doubt had potential. And yeah, I thought he demonstrated that he's got ability and he's got something there to work with. If they could perhaps get his positioning better, if they could perhaps get him a little bit more consistent, and they could perhaps maybe get a little bit more end product out of him. But the natural athleticism and ability to beat a man is something that he had. Yet Shrewsbury have decided that, you know, they don't want to keep him. So I don't know. It's a challenge, isn't it? You know, what the right thing to do is, but I thought he was the one that I could see if they'd have kept him or given him. I can't imagine he'd be on big wages. So I thought that he might have been somebody that they might have been able to keep hold of as kind of a bit of an experiment player that, you know, could come good, because I think he surprised me when we signed him. I thought he was very much a case of, you know, a lower level signing. You know, he might make the squad, he might not, but I'm not expecting him to play that much first team football. But he actually did all right, and I think he pushed for places, even though that he had no end product. But he did surprise me a little bit. I thought the others all pretty much made sense. Probably some of them on big wages in there.
Is there anyone in them other ones that surprised you? Oh, you know, someone like Tom Bayliss, who played a lot in his early years at South, but kind of was out of the picture under Hurst. You know, probably not a surprise. Elliot Bennett, in terms of age wise, it's not surprising to see him go. Of the three, you know, you said that Dan Udo is someone that I really want to keep. We've got Mal Benn and Aaron Pierre, and now obviously Morosi and Dunkley offer new deals, which is not surprising. Is there anything in that whole package of release and retain list that surprised you?
I was perhaps surprised to see that Aaron Pierre be offered a contract. I mean, that's probably all there is to say. I was a little bit surprised. He didn't play a great deal of football. He improved under Hurst, but I mean, he was brave. He's a brave defender, but I felt like Shrewsbury had better options at centre half. It's only an opinion, but obviously he's been offered a deal. Perhaps surprised by that, but. You know, again, it comes down to finances, how much money you'll be earning, all that kind of thing. But yeah, that was one thing that surprised me. I didn't expect to, especially at his age, to see him be offered another contract. So I would have thought that he probably won't have a great deal of other suitors. So I imagine that he will most likely be at the club next season. He's the one that I'd be pretty certain on, to be fair.
Yeah. We've had a host of questions from Salop fans today. I think we've got about 15 questions today. You know, Salop fans have really, we've been begging for questions all season, and now you've stepped up to the fore in the final podcast of the campaign. So we're going to read all through all these. Some relate to transfers, some relate to food. I know which ones I want to discuss. Tony Shrew is at, food. Tony Shrew has asked, I don't really get the odds and ends of this. Can we sign someone who Rumour Mill suggests, or at least someone we've heard of? I don't know, Tony. We'll wait and see. The Serial Shrew has said, early expectations for next season. Out of the six offered new deals, who will stay and who will go? So we'll tackle the first, but early expectations for next season. Probably tough to know with nine players on the books, but what would you expect? When Paul Hurst last came in at Shrewsbury, his first spell, the first campaign was about survival, which they did. He had a very good summer of recruitment, and then obviously had that fantastic campaign where he finished third in the table. I can't imagine it'll go as well this time. But are you in the camp of, not that it can't get any worse than last season, but they're going to be higher up than last season because Hurst has got a summer to shape and mould and put together what he wants to do?
Yeah, it depends on the successfulness of the recruitment, to be perfectly honest with you. At the moment, there's a lot of players there that didn't play a lot of first-team football last season that are still here. You know, I did a piece yesterday about targets for the 9 players that still remain at Shrewsbury. And I think of 3 of them, the target was to help Shrewsbury push higher up the table. I think that was Feeney, Shipley and Carl Winchester. Now, the rest of the players are basically... We had Max Matter, who couldn't get in the squad come the end and ended up going out on loan to Sligo Rovers. We had Ryland Idowo, who made a few appearances, but, you know, didn't feature all that much. We had Jason Schreyer, who kind of slipped right down to the bottom of the pecking order come the end of last season. So a lot of the players that are currently there are not really first-team regulars. I would say we've got 3 first-team regulars. There's a good chance we're going to have no goalkeepers. So we're going to need, you know, there's going to be an absolute upheaval in the squad.
Second part of the question from the serial shoot. Out of the 6 offered new deals, who will stay and who will go? This is a prediction and a half, Ollie.
Yeah, I'm going to write a story about that in tomorrow's paper, actually, what my thoughts are on those. Aaron Pierre has discussed, I think he'll stay. Mal Benin, I think it will depend on how competitive his offer is. I would say that since he's joined Shrewsbury in the summer, his stock has risen. So maybe he might have some more compelling offers somewhere else. I'll be pretty sure that Morosi and Dunkley will go, or they'll certainly be trying their hand elsewhere to see what they can get, what offers that other clubs will come in for them. And then who else we got on that list? Just remind
Udo.
Me. Udo, I'm 50-50 on Udo. I'm not sure what he's going to do. Obviously, the contract is on the table. It's whether the two parties agree that that's what he's worth. Clearly, at the moment, they're apart in what their estimations of what they think he's worth and what he thinks he's worth. You know, Dan Udo scored 7 goals since Paul Hurst came in, scored in the last 3 consecutive games, just looked an all-round better player. And I would have said that Shrewsbury should be trying to keep him as best as possible. That's my opinion. I think it's a bit daft if they don't, but it's ultimately it's their choice, isn't it? It's their choice, it's their money, it's their club. So they'll make the decision on whether they think that Dan should stay. I would like him to stay. I think he's a good player. And I think that it's hard. You know, Shrewsbury tried to recruit forwards last season and they were a bit of a disaster, weren't they? Obviously, the Max Matter signing hasn't worked to this point. Obviously, they signed Kieran Phillips. That didn't work. So they made Ryan Bowman vice-captain. I mean, that didn't work either. So, you know, the success of the other forwards, well, there wasn't any, was there? There was Dan Udo alone. So recruiting forward players that are going to score your goals at this level is a challenge. So how they go about, you know, fixing that, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Jamie Egerton Dean has asked, do you think there'll be any outgoings with the players who remain under contract and not in Paul Hurst's long-term plans? He mentioned Max Matter, who was loaned out, Taylor Perry, who sort of found game time harder to come by at the start of Hurst's reign. Idowo as well, not in the last 2 matchday squads. Anderson fancied instead of Schreyer in the last 3. We're not seen since January. What's your thoughts in terms of those players? Obviously, Max Matter will come back now from his loan spell, but could you see any of those going back out or being sold?
Probably not those ones. The ones I could probably see going more are Carl Winchester and Jordan Shipley, to be honest. I would imagine that those players would both have interest from clubs further up League One. Especially Shipley with his technical ability. I mean, he's put himself well in the shot window with some of the goals he scored recently. Shipley very close to the likes of Tom Bayliss, Marco Morosi. You know, I know they kind of shared together, car shared. and things like that, like for training and stuff. So whether you know, what reason is that? Okay, he's under contract, but you know, is he going to be wanting a relegation battle again this season? Is Jordan Shipley a better footballer than that? I would probably argue that he is. So it really wouldn't surprise me if he's got like a top end League One move lined up. And with Winchester, you know, get probably to the age where Winchester is, will he be looking and thinking, well, if I can get a 2-year deal elsewhere, the club might be thinking we can get a fee. You know, he's getting to the age where he's probably going to want a bit more security. So will he want to be going into the last year of his contract at Shrewsbury, or who knows? So yeah. I think they're the ones that Shrewsbury have got to worry about more so, because they can't really afford to lose any more players, especially the ones that are pretty much regular first teamers and have played pretty much every game. That's not going to be ideal for them.
No. Paul Hewitt's asked, with the financial constraints of the football club, are we realistically going to struggle to attract the type of quality players we need to compete at League One level? And are we in for another season of struggle?
Yes, is my answer to that question. I would say that everything said there. I mean, I've been looking at doing a piece on some transfers and some potential targets for Shrewsbury, but I look at it and think, well, where am I looking? I feel like I'm looking at players like that are out of contract in League.
Here's two. A question for you all in terms of, you know, we say there then, and we've had the recent reports about Shrewsbury's finances and the amount of money lost and difficult situation that the football club's been in. As player, it's hard to answer this, I suppose, because we're not in the heads of, you know, prospective League One, League Two, National League players who may be trying to step up to the Football League. Will players, that could potentially go against Shrewsbury now. That's out in the public domain. If a player's, you know, interest comes in from Shrewsbury and Shrewsbury are interested in signing a player, will he look at that and go, well, maybe I don't fancy that. You know, they're obviously not going to be able to put a squad together which is going to compete higher up League One. You know, they might be able to put one together that'll compete mid-table, but, you know, could that be adding to that question there that's been asked by, who was asked that question? Paul Hewitt, saying, you know, you're going to struggle to attract the type of quality players. That could potentially go against that almost.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, I mean, like I say, I'm looking at this piece at the moment and I'm thinking, like, what pool are Shrewsbury fishing in?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at, you know, free agents from League Two. I look at like the top end of League One and I'm thinking, well, if you're a player that's been playing at the top end of League One, maybe players that are subject to requirements at teams like Wickham, Shrewsbury can maybe be looking at, but are they going to have to take a pay cut, you know, to join Shrewsbury? Are they going to get a pay increase? Like, we're well aware of the financial constraints of the club and it feels as though we're still dealing from the financial ramifications of the losses in the accounts. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think maybe I'm doing them a disservice and maybe the financial accounts, maybe they will be in a position where they can build a competitive squad. And, you know, perhaps now that there's been a bit of a clear out and they've got some high wages off the wage bill, you know, they will be able to pay people decent money to come in and play for the club. But I don't know, it feels at the moment as if it's going to be a real struggle. From what I understand, and I'm still waiting to speak to the CEO so we can get some clarification on, I suppose, which direction the club's heading in, because, you know, from a finances point of view, we've had the accounts released and we've not heard a thing, have we? Or anything from the club at all. So we ain't got a clue really what position it's in, whether, you know, they're in a position where they're going to have a competitive squad next year. We don't know. So, you know, we're going to have to wait and see, you know, over the coming weeks when we get a chance to ask these people some questions and to kind of get some targets and kind of get some ideas of where they're going to be from a financial perspective.
Andrew Quinn has asked a sort of similar question, but a little bit different. He said, hi, Ollie. Do you feel the club is or are working to be in a better position come pre-season for this coming season to be better equipped? To be better both on the pitch and off than the previous one with regards to what went on with all the changes. We'll sort of move away from, we've talked about sort of the unknown of the football side of things and how it's going to be different in terms of recruitment. But off the pitch, you know, we've had a chance, haven't we, Ollie, to sit down with Liam Dooley in the past, and he's told us about sort of changes he's making at Shrewsbury. And obviously there was that pretty damning news with the accounts. in terms of off the field, are you confident that Shrewsbury are sort of moving into a better direction? That'll all be proved in, you know, the next set of accounts, I suppose, and how the club is looking then. But what's your feeling around that in terms of off the field?
Yeah, I feel like they've got a good grip on the financial problems, I suppose, at the moment. I think they're aware of them and they're trying to put them right. It's just whether that they can do that in time for next season and whether that allows them to build a competitive squad or not, because ultimately that's what it's about. I feel like the appointment of Liam Dooley, I think he's been quite impressive since he's come in. I think he's done a decent job. He's promised to communicate with the fans, and probably aside from the accounts, he's done that pretty well with his open letters. And I think that, you know, he seems to be doing a pretty good job. He's very visible around the club. So I feel like they're in a decent enough place off the field. Are plans in place that, you know, it's a really difficult one. Like, they're in a, put it this way, we're in a much better position than we were this time last year. It's the 3rd of May, and I don't know whether you remember, but it was a long old time that we were struggling to find out what was going on with the manager. We didn't appoint Matt Taylor until the end of June, I think it was, which is far too late. So we're in a much better position. They're in a position that already they can start building and they can start thinking towards next season. So I would say that does leave us. Obviously, you've got the CEO in position as well. So everything's there that it's got to get to work. Whereas last season, it was so up in the air with what was going on. You can't help but think that that played a part in, you know, the football that then followed on the pitch.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. We've got a couple of others. This one's from a bit of a rumour that was doing the rounds on the socials earlier this week. Rumours of Mickey Moore going back to Cheltenham. The guy's put his level, but we'll say Cheltenham. I don't think I'd be the only fan. See, this is good news. I agree with the director of football model, but Mickey Moore is way out of his depth. Recruitment was dreadful. I know you sort of had questions in from Salop fans directly to you earlier this week, Ollie, about that. I know you sort of asked Paul Hurst about his future last week. I think your reply was sort of one rumour at a time. But is there anything in this, or is that, you know, Shrewsbury sort of hung their colours to the mast almost last summer with going with this new model, director of football model, bringing in Mickey Moore, coming with a good reputation, we have to say that. But is there anything in this, or is it just sort of social media chat?
The God's honest answer is that it's something that we'll have to do some digging around to try and find out the answers to it. It's a challenging one to answer because you don't want to rule things out because you never know when situations might change. That was the perfect example of that was what happened with Jack Price. Whenever we put that to the club, we were kind of pretty much told it wasn't happening. And then next thing you know, we signed. So you don't know. You don't want to kind of rule things out because you never know what, you know. It's fair to say that, you know, things haven't gone to plan. Obviously, Mickey Moore appointed Matt Taylor, and we all know that didn't go to plan because he was out of the job by the end of January, and Paul Hurst was in position. So I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question, I'm afraid. I know a lot of fans have asked that. I thought about him going back to Cheltenham. I'm not sure why Cheltenham had won him back after he's left them like that. I mean, things do happen, but obviously he left them and then took all their staff. So I don't know. Feels like it might be a bit of a strange one for Cheltenham to, you know, obviously they've got relegated and part of their relegation will be because he left, took the assistant coach with him, took the head of recruitment with him. So I imagine they can attribute some of the relegation to the fact for him leaving. So it's would be, I don't know, I suppose a bizarre turn of events for him to suddenly, you know, end up back there. But he is well liked there. I tell you what, it is something that, you know, the Shrewsbury fans, you know, are particularly uncomplimentary of Mickey, who as a person I do really like and I've got a lot of time for from my dealings with him. But whenever you speak to anyone from Cheltenham or you speak to anyone on the circuit, they absolutely rave about him. I can remember talking to John Palmer, who we all know at Cheltenham, and he said you will have a squad that will stay up. Mickey's very good at working on a shoestring budget. And, you know, they did stay up, didn't they, ultimately? So, I don't know, was it more because, was it because that Shrewsbury were good, or was it because everybody else wasn't? That's the question, isn't it? Yeah. But, you know, it's certainly one of those things that he's very highly thought of. But there's a lot of transfers so far that haven't worked out. And, you know, that's what, as a director of football, it's about bringing in players, you know, making good managerial appointments, making good appointments. And it's not quite happened for Mickey yet. But like, I really want him to be successful, in fairness. So, you know, I'm reluctant to draw too much judgment on it at this stage.
Ian Gibson's asked an on-pitch question, literally. Will we be returning to a bigger pitch? Pretty sure Shrewsbury have always used to have one of the biggest pitches in years gone by. I could be wrong, though.
It's on my list, that is. That's on my list. I saw that question come in and thought, you know what? That might make a nice story. So I'm going to ask Paul Hurst about the pitch situations. I'll ask Paul when I have the opportunity to speak to him. I'm hoping that'll be quite soon, about some of the pitch related stuff. I mean, I can remember asking Steve Cottrell about it once, because it's like one of them things that fans love to keep asking about. And Steve Cottrell was adamant that the pitch size was no different. I don't know, I wasn't there the season before.
That pitch has got smaller than it used to be, definitely.
Really?
Oh yeah, 100%. If you took a picture from the press box, looking down at that sort of left towards the stand behind the goal, where the players warm up, progressively since the meadow opened in whatever, I can't remember what year it would have been, 2006 maybe.
Yeah,
I bet you it's smaller. It's got to be, because okay, the gap there now is huge. But yeah, that'd be an interesting one to find out.
But when we asked Steve about it, he was adamant that it hadn't changed. So I mean, what can you do? You can ask the manager and see what he says, and if he don't want to tell you, or he wants to tell you what his version of events, then what can you do? Like, you just got to take it as...
That's it, yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be able to sort of find out. Right,
Paul Hurst's been there
before,
though, actually, so that might be interesting. Sorry, Paul Hurst has been at the club before, hasn't he? So he might notice that the pitch is smaller.
Yeah,
potentially.
Might have something
to say about that, so I'll ask.
Interesting one to ask. Just on to our second set of questions before we wrap up this extended podcast. Steve has asked, why are no Academy kids getting a pro contract? Who's behind it and why?
Well, I imagine the person offering the Academy kids contracts is Mickey Moore. And I imagine the reason that no Academy kids have got contracts is because they're not good enough, I would imagine, in the views of Mickey Moore. That's it. You don't just give kids contracts because they're your kids and they come through your academy, so you've got to give them contracts. Like, they've got to earn them, haven't they? Like,
yeah.
This is the way sport works. Like, you know, they've got to be good enough. And I don't know, I don't want to be too complimentary of them, because like these young lads, we've barely seen them play, so it's hard to say. You have to trust the people in the positions that make the judgments. And, you know, the fact that two managers came in, and I think the three young lads, Declan Hutchins, Josh Bailey and Nana Owusu, who have been released, what you have to take into consideration is that Matt Taylor picked Jack Loughran and Luca Whitney ahead of them earlier in the season. And I can remember saying, like, what's happened to the three lads in the first contract? Are they injured? And he just said, no, these are better. So that pretty much tells you where they were at, those lads, from what Matt said. And, you know, Paul Hurst come in and we've still not seen them. I think they've been training, but it's a tough one, isn't it? Like, what do you do? You don't want to be too I asked about it, and like, to be honest, they're just kids. You don't want to be too uncomplimentary of them, do you? Like, because we haven't seen them, so it's not like we can turn around and say, oh, he's a good player or he's not a good player, because we haven't seen much of them play. So we have to do the best we can. And so those decisions have been made by Mickey, I'm assuming. They've been released to kind of explore other avenues. What I would say is everybody, I saw some comments and stuff about Shrewsbury's young players and the fact that they're not producing enough academy players, but don't forget they produced Travis Hearns and sold him to Newcastle at the start of this season. Everybody forgets about that, but I imagine the club made a substantial profit out of Travis Hearns. So, you know, he came through last season. He would have played. Matt Taylor told me that if he had stayed at the club, it wouldn't have been a gesture. He would have been a midfielder. He would have played in central midfield. They were they had really high hopes for him. And he's gone on to do steady at Newcastle, hasn't he? Yeah, they do produce players. Just sometimes they sell them before they get to the first team or, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. You do get sort of cycles. John Freeman's asked a short one. When should I turn on my Shrewsbury Town alerts? I'm guessing he's sort of trying to get a bit of a steer on summer transfer window.
Paul Hurst on holiday at the moment. So, but I think managers are always working, aren't they? So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, personally, my Shrewsbury Town alerts are always on. You know, it could be 11 o'clock at night and my Shrewsbury Town alerts are on. I'm not expecting anything too big to happen. So I'm not expecting anything too big too soon. But I think things will start moving over the next couple of weeks. I think that's for sure.
Yeah. Mark Franklin.
Forget the championship season. The championship season's not even finished yet, has it?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's still going. Mark Franklin's asked one I didn't expect to read today. Non-Shrewsbury related. I've always wondered, do players train with full-size, full-weight match balls or lighter training ones? Maybe impact, etc. dictates smaller ones being used. I suspect we have been training with 99p balls you can buy at the beach this season. Thanks. Slicko must be Mark Franklin's nickname. Goes by Slicko. I don't know if you know the answer to that question, Ollie. I imagine they're all the same.
Yeah, I think they do train with just the same balls that they play with on a Saturday. Funny you should say they should ask that question, because the last couple of weeks when we've arrived at press, we've had to wait quite a while for Paul Hurst to come out and speak to us, and there's been some balls knocking around. So we've been kicking them around on the training pitch while we've been waiting for press. And they're rock hard. I wouldn't head one. It hurt my head.
Yeah, they are.
They're a lot harder than you think, aren't they? There were some of the balls that the players were training with. I can remember trying to throw him one to one of the Shrewsbury media staff, and he kicked it back to me, and it hurt when I stopped it. So, yeah, I imagine they are proper full size balls, and they play on a full size training pitch as well, believe it or not.
With full size goals. Luke Morris has asked, block one and two are always empty. It would be nice to see them full for a change. Has the club considered supporting schools or businesses with discounted / free tickets? Win-win, surely. I'm sure that's maybe a question for your sit down with Liam Dooley at some point. But yeah, traditionally those blocks have always been pretty empty. We got two questions in from Follow the Town, who said, other than the statement issued by the club, is anything being done to challenge the decision to scrap FA Cup replays? Would Salop consider joining a boycott of the competition? This is on the back of the news that replays are going to be scrapped in the first round. A lot of clubs have kicked off about it. I believe there's a group of around 20 clubs that have written to the Culture Secretary now asking the government to intervene on this. And we know there's been sort of rumours and murmurs of a potential boycotting of the competition. I'm sure you haven't got an answer on this, Ollie.
No, I
want to ask the club, but it would be it's all opinion. It'd be very interesting to see if clubs start. I think if a few clubs started to boycott the competition, then I think there would be a very much a domino effect.
My question would be: are Shrewsbury in a financial position where they can afford to boycott the FA Cup?
That's
my answer to that question is no.
That's the only thing. Is there going to be solidarity with other clubs? I think this needs to be addressed and overturned, because Shrewsbury in years gone by, obviously not at the moment, the financial position at Shrewsbury has been good in years gone by, and a small proportion of that has been down to FA Cup replays against Liverpool. I know they played Manchester United, West Ham and Chelsea, they weren't replays, but that just shows how valuable the FA Cup is to clubs like Shrewsbury. We're not talking about clubs further down in National League. It's valuable to them too, but valuable to League One. And I just hope something's done. Whether you keep them for the first four rounds, I don't know, three rounds. But yeah, it's divided opinion, and it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
I don't actually think the clubs are that bothered about the replays going. They're just bothered about the finances, aren't they?
Yeah, there is that. But then at the same time, some of the greatest moments in the FA Cup have been through replays. And I think what rubs people up the wrong way, we had a big chat about this. I think me and the former Shrewsbury Town reporter, now the West Brom reporter, Lewis Cox, we talked about it on the West Brom podcast a couple of weeks ago. And we were saying I got a bit irate. And I think a couple of days before...
It's unlike you, Johnny.
Oh, mate. Yeah, I know. Calm as anything, aren't I? I think a few days before Tottenham and Newcastle had announced an end-of-season friendly in Australia. And then we're hearing all this news at the moment. Oh, so-and-so's going to Los Angeles and this and that. Yeah, that's fair enough. But if you can... The only reason replays have been scrapped is for the benefit of the big clubs. You've got the biggest squads, pay the biggest money, and the average amount of replays in the competition is pretty low. So I just don't see the need for this.
No, I agree. I agree. But I also don't think it... I think as long as the financial distribution improves and clubs...
But I don't think it will. I don't think it will because the money in the FA Cup is not huge anyway. And I don't think it's going to get any better. Just on finances, Follow the Times asked another question, which I know you've replied to on social media. He said, also, what on earth is happening to the long overdue COVID payments for the Premier League, which we're told are so vital to ensuring the future finances at clubs at our level? I know this has been referenced in sort of statements before. I think even when Brian Caldwell was the chief executive, it was mentioned. I know Roland Witchley has referenced it in some of his statements in the past. But as you've replied, Ollie, probably a question for the new CEO or the newer CEO.
But it'll be
interesting to see, because that's been a topic that has been discussed by a number of clubs in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if they're going to happen anymore. Like, is this not going to happen? Like, I mean, so far down, kick the can down the road so far that it almost becomes like you start questioning whether it's even going to happen.
Exactly.
It's a good question. And I'm not sure about the answer, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah. And we'll finish off with one final question from our very own Nathan Judah, who steps into my hot seat from time to time. I think Salop fans probably like him more than me because he chucks out free stuff. But he's asked our favourite question of the week. Best and worst press food of the season.
When he steps into your shoes, he actually asks me that question anyway.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he kind of... We have...
I'm more professional, you see, Ollie. I'm all about the football until the end, and I get a bit hungry.
Yeah, we spend the first 10 minutes of the podcast talking complete and utter BS.
So I can imagine that.
Because I know this is a family-friendly podcast, but that's what we do for the first, you know... So yeah, that's what we do when Judah comes in, and then he gives away some free stuff at the end. I shafted him at the last one because I tried to get him to give away the new Shrewsbury away kit, and I don't think he quite fancied that. But the best press food would probably have been Barnsley away.
We had
a chili con carne.
Oh, nice.
But it had jalapenos in it, and it had it came with like taco shells.
I tell you what, I've had a good chili at Burnley last season at Turf Moor.
I had jalapenos
and all that in it.
Yeah, I had chili at Burnley when I went covering Villa this season, and I had a chili at Burnley, and it must be
a delicacy up in Burnley or something.
When I went to Wolves, didn't I last week? And I had a chicken ham and leek pie. I had a full three-course meal at Wolves. It was lovely.
I love to credit Wolves, but their food is very good. And we're gonna move that. I know. Well, this is quite sort of apt.
I haven't told you about the duck wrap. We had a duck wrap at Bristol Rovers as well. Hoisin duck wrap from one of their. But you can actually buy them at the ground, which is probably something that I was like curious to ask about. Probably ask the CEO about, like, you know, the in-house. Kind of, because Shrewsbury's, I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but it's quite basic, isn't it? It's like hot dogs, burgers, sausage rolls. But this was like a proper hoisin, like duck wrap, spring onions and all that kind of jazz. And, you know, the Shrewsbury media staff lads were absolutely like stoked about it.
No,
like
they're
absolutely buzzing. But it was really, really nice. But it was sold like, it wasn't just for the media. It was a voucher that you got and all the fans. They were like £8, I think they were. But it was really, really nice, whatever it was. Yeah, lovely.
You know, I know you mentioned the Shrewsbury media lads like their food. They certainly do. We see that on Shrewsbury Town's TikTok. They do their sort of match day ratings and food, and they're always in service stations and rating the food at games. So now we're going to come on to your worst press food of the season, Ollie. Now, I'm sure there's some grounds where you probably don't get anything.
Exeter, away.
And why is
bloody
that?
Bloody miles away. You don't have a desk for your laptop, so you have to sit with it on your lap. You don't. It's so far away, and you. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm very grateful for anything, but you don't get a media voucher or anything extra. And yeah, there's no parking. Obviously, that is a big thing for us journalists, isn't it, JD? Like, parking is, you know, it's like it's an essential.
Yeah.
Like, going somewhere and not having parking is like, it's an absolute, like, Charlton away is a nightmare because there's nowhere to park. Once you get to the stadium, which is in the centre of South London, you can't park anywhere. So, yeah, that was pretty pants. My day at Charlton a few weeks ago was pretty awful as well. That was a proper 7 o'clock in the morning to 12:30 at night kind of experience. Getting the tube through London, and you know the little snacks you get from Marks and Spencer's, like the little sausage rolls and pork pies, and then they're like brownies and stuff. That's what food they do. I think the old geezers who run the media bit, which is like a classroom. You've been to Charlton, haven't you? It's like a classroom.
I've never been
under
to
the stadium. You've not? Oh, it's quite nice. It's a weird press box, like the desk come over you and like sit on your lap almost as if like you've got a dinner tray on your lap. Like you like can't get out.
Gross.
But it's a great view. So I quite like the stadium. It's just miles away. Apparently I was in the office earlier this week, and apparently the only place worse to get to than Charlton is Crystal Palace. And guess where I'm going next week?
Crystal Palace.
Yep.
I've never been. I have heard that as well. But Exeter are bottom of the pile. Barnsley are top of the pile. Ollie, we're almost out of time on Shrewsbury season. I'm sure we'll South fans will be hearing and seeing plenty from you in the weeks to come as Shrewsbury look to build a new squad. But I'm just going to ask you finally, best and worst moments of the campaign. There's a lot of bad moments and not very many good ones. So we'll start with the lowest moment of the campaign for Shrewsbury in your point of view.
I will say the lowest moment of the campaign was no Stevenage at home. That was pretty grim. That was the week before Matt Taylor was sacked. The atmosphere that day was, I mean, that was a really, really poor performance. So that was. That was a bad one. That's probably the worst moment of the campaign. The best, I mean, Northampton away was a brilliant day. Just the way that Shrewsbury managed to stay up, didn't stay up that day, did they? Northampton, just Paul Hurst's first game. What were we going to see? Were we going to see a reaction? And just the fact that they managed to play so well, it gave the fans, the atmosphere felt good. It felt like there was a real positive vibe around the club. So, I would probably say Northampton away. Reading away was pretty good too.
Good win.
That was a good away win. And some other games in there like draws at Derby and, you know, Bolton away was a pretty good day too. It was a good draw, wasn't it? Important draw. When it was getting all exciting. So there are some good moments in there for the Shrewsbury fans to have kind of seen this season, but there's some bad ones too. Yeah. Plenty of them.
It was indeed. Ollie, thanks very much for your time. Enjoy your summer. Plenty of cricket?
Probably. Badly.
Plenty of cricket? Plenty of hundreds? Plenty of 50s?
Unlikely, I would have
plenty
said.
Plenty of nicking
but
off
I'll
the
try.
First slip?
Plenty of that, yeah. To be fair, you've got to get close enough to the ball to nick it, so I think that'll be my first challenge. So we'll see. I am playing this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, so it could go one or two ways, Johnny. It could go one or two ways.
There we go. Well, we'll check in back in with you in pre-season to see how your summer's gone and how Shrewsbury summer's gone as well. It's going to be a big few weeks, a few months for Salop as they look to rebuild their squad to have a better season in League One next season. As always, thank you very much for all your questions throughout this season. Thank you very much for listening to all our episodes. And until next time, from me and Ollie, goodbye.